Hello there, and welcome to In Your Own Kin. I'm your host, Charlotte. I'm a lover of great food, sometimes artist, sleep-in advocate, storyteller, mama, and postpartum professional in Naarm, Melbourne. Each week, I'll be chatting to families about their journey into parenthood, the grandest of adventures. Parenting is beautiful, messy, sparkly, hard work. You were never meant to do this alone. It's time to get comfy in your own kin. In Your Own Kin acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land where you are listening to today's episode. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that the telling of stories has happened here since time immemorial. In Your Own Kin is recorded by the Birrarung on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty of these lands has not and is not ceded, and it remains stolen. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. In this week's episode, Liz shares her parenthood journey and life with Lee and Sienna. Liz speaks with such warmth and generosity about her journey, matrescence, and finding the time to foster the parts of herself beyond being a mama. If you are choosing to breast or chest feed, this is an episode that you just don't want to miss. It's absolutely packed to the brim with great tips and recommendations, and you can find all of these in the show notes. In many ways, Liz's story is a tale of parenthood in lockdown. I hope that this episode provides some comfort and light for you. I also want to acknowledge that this episode was recorded during Reconciliation Week and send lots of extra love to all of those families in Victoria that have not been able to mark this week in person with their community. I cannot even imagine how challenging it must have been to have had this week pass without being able to come together on country with your kinship networks. If you would like to see some photos of Liz and her divine family, be sure to head on over to Kin by Charlotte on Instagram. Here's Liz. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today, Liz. It's so divine to be speaking to you in this never-ending Melbourne lockdown.
Thank you for having me. So nice to chat and see your little face during this.
I actually think, Liz, that you were the first person that I ever asked to be on the show. So it's been a long time coming.
Yes, and so nice to actually have taken the time to wait. I feel like maybe, you know, this will all sort of unfold, but I'm in a really good headspace to reflect now. So it's really nice to do it at this point.
Oh, that's so beautiful to hear. Liz, would you like to let everyone know a little bit about yourself, where you're living and who's in your family?
So I am Liz. I live in Brunswick with my husband, Lee, and my daughter, who's 14 months, Sienna. And we are just packing up our lives to move to the next house, which is in Seddon, bypassing mum and dad's house for about a 6-month stint, which will be super nice after having been locked in for about a year on our own without their help.
Oh my gosh, yes. Grandparents to lean into.
Yes, it'll be amazing. I imagined last year I was just, if only I could get mum and dad to come and move in with us. Yeah, so now my dream's coming true a little bit.
Absolutely. And a whole new neighbourhood to explore. It's such an exciting time.
Yes, new playgrounds, new streets to walk. It'll be gorgeous.
So, so divine. Liz, can you take me back to pre-parenthood when it was you and Lee?
So we met when we were very young. I think I was 16 and Lee was 17 at high school. I don't actually remember the really beginning moments of meeting him, but he was my school captain. So I think I thought he was pretty cute and signed up to every possible house activity that I could. And in the end, sort of managed to get his attention. I think he was a soccer player back then and I kicked the only goal in house soccer. So I think he was like, okay, who is this? And then finally he was a year above me. We sort of started to chat, started to text message, and then he ended up asking me out, which was really cute. So we've been together since high school. Yeah, it's been a long time. One thing that I always wonder is like, how did we manage to stay together for so long? But I think it's because we sort of went through big milestones together. So he was in year 12 when we met. So he had his big year 12 year. And I did my big year 12 year. While I was doing year 12, he was doing first year uni. Yeah, it kind of like went on like that. Every year was another big year for us. So we kind of had other focuses apart from each other. And it was really nice to sort of be each other's backup and friend and support always there. But not sort of, you know, the central focus of each other's lives. So I think that's probably been one of our things that has kept us together for this long.
So true. You've almost grown alongside and into one another.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's been, and we've totally changed as people along the way, which is pretty wild to think back to who we were back then. But of course, we would have in the last, I think it's been 17 years. So yeah, it's a long time. Our pre-Sienna life was a pretty fun, typical sort of 20s year of like lots of friends and lots of travel. And I think we lived a pretty good life. We lived in Elwood for a little while, so had a beautiful by the beach lifestyle, and we had nice times, really nice times.
And at what point did you start talking about the possibility of having a family?
We always talked about it, but being something super far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really sat down and said, all right, yep, we're both really keen on having babies, let's go. So I think at the time when Sienna was conceived, we both really weren't in the headspace for it. It was something, I think Lee was just promoted at work and I had just started, kicked off a business of my own. So the doctor actually said one thing that resonated with me through the whole pregnancy. It was unplanned but welcome. And that's totally sort of how it happened for us, which is kind of nice because we always thought it would be a shame to sort of get to a point where we'd have to, you know, we've left it so long, we'd have to really try hard to have a baby. So I guess unexpectedness of it was a really good thing for us, because I think we would never have gotten around to the whole, all right, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Feels like such an adult decision.
Yeah, I know. I think, and also you still at 30, I think I'm 33. Yeah, 33.
It's all a blur in lockdown.
How old am I? I still feel so young at heart, I guess. So like to make a big decision like that is, I think it's still something that feels so huge. So it's, yeah, I think kind of nice for both of us that it happened naturally and sort of unexpectedly. We never really had that chat, which was interesting.
Talk to us about finding out then. What was it like when you found out that you were pregnant?
Yeah, well, I was working in a nappy brand at the time. So I was surrounded in babies and mums, which was super nice. So it was kind of like a little vision into what could be. And it was a beautiful space to be in. So when I found out, or when I had an inkling, actually, we had a weekend away up into Red Hills. I had a client up there who made beautiful wine. And so we had a little winery weekend planned. And when we were there, I thought, oh, I'll just see how the weekend rolls, see if anything changes. And then at the end of the weekend, I kind of thought, I can sort of feel shifts in my body that felt potentially different to what I was waiting for my period to come. And I think my boobs were feeling a bit sore. And I thought, this all feels a bit new. And I thought at the end of the weekend, I think we'd had a day at one of the wineries. We did some tastings and we were a couple of glasses under, which is probably not the best thing to be doing if you're wondering if you're pregnant. But I had the courage to say to Lee, I think there is a chance that I'm pregnant. And we were at the time actually at a beautiful winery that we both have loved to go to through our sort of time together. And that's Montalto. And we were sitting all snuggled under an umbrella. It was raining and we were eating pizza. And I just remember Lee saying, I think he just had a huge smile on his face and he said, well, maybe it's time. So I thought, oh, what a relief, because I just think to have had him feel like that and feel, not that he was ready, but to have him sort of have that reaction just gave me this big sense of relief, because I think I was like, is it time? Am I ready? Like, I just felt, I guess, trying to wrap my head around it. So, yeah, it was nice to have that. And then we headed home that day and got a pregnancy test on the way home and confirmed that evening that, yep, we were pregnant. So we were both super excited and happy and I think over the moon, but also still running through the whole, oh my goodness, a little bit nervous.
Absolutely.
Wrapping our heads around it. Yeah.
And how were you feeling physically in those first few weeks to months?
I was so super lucky with pregnancy. So I think that's the one stage of this whole thing that was an absolute breeze. I just can't believe how lucky I was. It was almost like I would need to check in and see if I was still pregnant, because I felt so normal, which was weird. And great. Even up until like the, I think almost like the third trimester, I had a small bump. Yeah, not an obvious bump. So I think it was winter as well. So I could hide it pretty easily under jumpers and things, but extremely lucky in that I had nothing except for a taste aversion to shiitake mushrooms. That was the only difference for me.
Very specific.
I know. I think because we used to have Vietnamese noodle soup most weeks, it just all of a sudden I was like, what is this? so it was always noodle soup without the shaki mushrooms, please. Yeah, I was incredibly lucky.
And you mentioned you were feeling a little bit uncertain about starting a family from the outset. How were you navigating that throughout the pregnancy? Was that something that shifted, or was that a work in progress for you?
I think it was a big work in progress for me personally. Lee, I know he went through probably a similar thing in his own way. But for me, I think I knew I always wanted to have a baby or babies, but I definitely took a long time to, I guess, come around to the new idea of it being now. So one thing we actually did, which was super helpful, was at our first scan, we decided we'd find out the gender. And I never ever felt like I didn't want this to be the case. I think I was just, it just took a long time to just come to terms with the fact that, yep, this is happening now. And it was super exciting. And I think I would say it didn't last long, like maybe the first couple of weeks. Once we went in for that first scan and saw the little baby and saw her, or saw their profile, it looked so much like a little Cosentino profile, so Lee's family side. And I thought, wow, she actually already looks like one of the little cousins. And then I think that really did switch it. And just to see, yeah, this little human, and sort of to almost be able to imagine, you know, them on the other side. So finding out the gender was amazing, because it just meant that we could imagine our life a little bit. And I think that helped Lee and I, especially because we didn't really have, I guess, vision, like, let's try and get pregnant and like by next year we'll have a baby sort of thing. Yeah, so that was a really good decision that we did.
Oh, so magic. The like wonder of seeing them for the first time on that screen is just so mind-blowing.
Oh, amazing. It was so amazing.
And what was your support network looking at that point? Were you leaning into a big kinship network, or were you kind of locking down just the three of you?
Yeah, so Lee and I decided not to tell anyone until 12 weeks. And I think maybe that's because we still felt nervous about it all. I think looking back on it, I kind of wish I did tell people earlier, like especially our parents. But yeah, we did keep it to ourselves. And maybe it was because we were unsure, wanted to make sure everything was healthy and that the pregnancy would follow through to the second trimester and all of those things before telling anyone. But I think that was a pretty tricky first 12 weeks to keep it to yourself, especially from your closest family. Yeah, we did keep it to ourselves till then. But then sharing it with our family was pretty amazing. I still remember telling Lee's mum and dad, and Lee's mum screamed, and that was gorgeous, because I just know that they were super, super excited for it. I did see a few times little things being knitted left in little baskets around the house, so I was like, is this a sign, or is this an accidental leaving of knitting?
Oh my goodness.
And then my mum and dad were gorgeous too. Being the awkward person that I am, I think we were celebrating their anniversary. We all cheered and we said, happy anniversary, you're also going to be grandparents. And they just looked at us like we were joking. And then it took a long time to say, no, that wasn't a joke. That was real. You're going to be grandparents. And so, yeah, that was gorgeous too. From there, it's been our families and our friends. It was a nice time actually to sort of maybe even take that time to think about it, come to terms with it all. And then at 12 weeks, when we were all ready and comfortable with the idea to be able to tell other people.
Oh, so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Were you doing any preparation, Liz? Were you preparing for the birthday or preparing for postpartum throughout the pregnancy?
Yeah. So I had my cousin had had a baby, I think about 9 months before we got pregnant. So I had sort of taken note of what she had done, and she had gone with a private midwife. So that was one thing that I really wanted to do. I think having sort of a continuity of care and also just that extra support was really important to me. I didn't know about doulas back then, so I feel like if I ever did it again, that would totally be the path I would go. But I did really enjoy the monthly check-ins with our midwife, who was super gorgeous. Yeah, it was so nice to have that time with her to sort of go in. She would check the heartbeat, and then she would give us a little update on what was going on that month and also what I should be doing to prepare myself. That was invaluable. That was where I learned a lot of what I knew. So I did lots of prep pre-birth. So I had, she told me all about like mental health plans. So going in and seeing the GP, this is actually one thing that I thought was kind of invaluable. Whether you feel like an anxious person as a, you know, but pre-baby or not, she said to sort of prepare yourself by going to the GP, getting a mental health plan and having that ready to go so that you don't have to faff around with that afterwards. So I did that and that was awesome.
Best advice ever.
It was really good because you just, even as like a feeling like a level-headed person, which I'm not at the best of times, no, I have, you know, gone through moments of anxiety. So it was good to have that up my sleeve. But I think even people that feel pretty level, you don't know what's going to hit you post-birth or in those early days, early months as a mum. So that was really good. And I just was surprised at that information. But she also had lots of amazing advice, like antenatally expressing colostrum. She had lots of things to prep for after the birth. So having ice packs ready and pump bottle filled with a little concoction of like witch hazel and aloe vera and things like that. She just had all these little sort of like tricks of the trade, things that we could prep to just make that time easier. Yeah, they were so good, so invaluable. So that was super helpful. And I remember chatting to a friend who was going through the pregnancy at a similar time. And she's like, what? Tell me more about that. So I started actually writing a bit of a list of all of these things that I was being told, just because I felt like they were something that not everyone kind of gets access to. Yeah. So some amazing, amazing advice.
Oh, that's so fabulous, Liz.
Yeah.
How did you access that service?
I actually just Googled who was local. They came up. They're just down the road from us. They were amazing actually through the pregnancy part of it. It just got a bit, I think COVID didn't help, but it got a bit tricky at the end. When I signed on at, I think it was at about 20 weeks, we got a message from the Royal Women's Hospital saying, would you like a student midwife? And I'd met a student midwife in a job that I had a long time ago. And I remember thinking, oh, that's such a great experience for someone. And I'd love to be able to give that opportunity to follow my pregnancy. So I said, absolutely, yes. And that was probably one thing that I didn't realize would be such a key thing for our little kin network towards the end. So we met Maddie, this really gorgeous girl who started coming with us to the appointments at the midwife. And she just had this like just really beautiful, sunny personality. We just connected straight away. So we had an amazing midwife, but Maddie was just like this little piece of sunshine that would come into the room every single time. So it was just one of those relationships where you just sort of think, I feel like I know you before this. She was able to come to both the midwife's appointments, but also she would come along to the Royal Women's. And so the interesting thing about the midwives and the Royal Women's is there was a bit of a rift in their beliefs, maybe is the right thing. So Maddie was amazing to sort of be like my second ear. She would hear what the women's would say and then she would hear what the midwives would say. And she was kind of like the knowledge bridge for me to sort of say, yep, you said the right things here. Yes, they pushed you there and sort of had my back along the way, which was so good.
So
she was kind of like, yeah, it really was like she wasn't working for anyone. She was sort of, I guess she was there for us more than anything. So she wasn't on anyone's side. So it was so good to have her. When it got down to the last weeks, we were sort of pushed into this decision of the women's weren't going to take on this program that the midwives had sort of been selling to us the whole way along. So the idea was that we would get our midwife at the women's and she would sort of be our primary carer at the women's hospital.
Yeah.
But then the women's hospital, I think due to COVID, kept pushing this program out and out and out, and it never, ever got pushed through. So at 37 weeks, I remember sitting at an active birth class and they said, so where are you birthing? And I said, actually, I don't know where I'm birthing.
Oh, Liz.
We could have our midwife at another hospital or we could birth with a complete stranger, which was never the plan at the women's. So we were kind of in this space of like having to make, it felt like quite a big decision at the time because the hospital that they were telling us we could go to was, I think, about 45 minutes away. I think just felt a bit scary. You sort of always get told that when you're heading to hospital, it's kind of like this little race to get in. So we thought a 45-minute drive didn't feel like a great plan. So anyway, it took a bit of time to work out, but we decided we'd go with the women's. And that also felt a bit hard to make the decision because we'd gone along with our midwife for so long and made such a beautiful relationship. And then it felt like it almost felt like we dumped her at the end, but it was kind of such a hard decision to work out what was the most important thing. And we'd always been told along the way through different practitioners how amazing the women's were. And they were about a 15-minute drive from our house. So it just felt like the most comfortable thing to do. But we also had the opportunity to take her in with us, our midwife, in with us as birth support. So she couldn't be active in the birth, but she could be there as birth support. But then when it got to it, I think in the last days, we were kind of getting daily updates of how COVID was affecting all of our sort of birth choices. So I think maybe a week before, we got a call saying, sorry, but we can't actually attend your birth anymore. You're only allowed one birth support.
Oh, yes.
And it couldn't be our midwife. I can't remember the exact reason why. Maybe it was actually too high risk for them to be in another hospital exposure. So they were trying to stay within their own circles. And especially because these midwives are looking after so many different women. So it made sense. And I completely understood that. The amazing thing was, I think we just managed to get Maddie in. So yeah, I think it was like the day before the first lockdown, Sienna was born. So Maddie was allowed in and she was just the pivotal voice in that room. So we are so lucky that she was still able to be there. Yeah, it was an interesting little series of events with our network, but I really wanted that. I think that continuity of care, but also that support through, the prenatal and postnatal time, which we were still able to get postnatal support through the midwives, which was really good too, but just a bit unfortunate we couldn't have them. We couldn't sort of have the original plan the whole way through.
Oh, and it's so hard because I think you just want that familiar face and you work so hard on building your support team to have that kind of looming over you in the last few weeks is really challenging.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there were so many challenges back then too. But I think, not having that one person that we saw her every single month and then every single week. So to not be able to have her there and have had that as the plan from 12 weeks and then to be thrown into the mix of you'll just get someone on the day that you've never met as kind of a rejig to the whole plan at 37, 38 weeks was, it felt very stressful, but it's all right. I think things did work out pretty well in the end. And we did actually meet one other person that I'd add into my little network of kin was an amazing acupuncturist, Amy O'Brien. She worked for a company at the time. She has now gone off on her own, but I remember meeting her. There was something about her way of talking, I think her way of treating, that I was just so lucky to have landed an appointment with her. I walked into the room and she was just like a mother for the mothers. She was just so beautiful. She was so welcoming into her room and it almost was like the kind of person I wish I had the whole way along. And that's how I sort of feel a doula would be. But she was more than just an acupuncturist at the time. She had a chat to me about how I was feeling and what was going on. And I think actually at the time we were having those days of the hazy smoke days from the bushfires. It was so crazy. And looking out of the window in her office, we could see just like a smoke haze across the city. So she was somewhere in East Melbourne. And she said this amazing thing. Actually, no, this is a blog post that she wrote that I think after I met her, I was like, who is this person? And I just looked up everything I could find about her and I found her blog. And she wrote this amazing blog post, which I then shared with other people. But it said that, so I was, I think, 40 weeks at the time and just not showing any signs of labor. She wrote that what she had found was that there was a huge percentage of mothers that hadn't actually gone into natural labor. Because their bodies actually don't feel safe to birth the baby because there's so much going on the outside of the world that their bodies can't sort of let go. And I just remember thinking that's such a sort of encouraging thing to feel. It's like it's not you not being able to do it. It's your body sort of still feeling protective of your baby and not wanting to bring it into a world that's so uneasy. Because I think even through the pregnancy there was like the climate change rally and the bushfires. There was so much question of like, why are we bringing in new humans to this world that just feels so unruly? So really encouraging to get that information from her and just have this amazing experience with her. So I saw her a few times and just the support that she gave at that very end when it all felt so rough and like our support network had sort of crumbled a little bit. She was sort of like a new person in the mix that has actually stayed in the mix up until now, which is so nice.
Oh my gosh, Amy is magic. Like, honestly, I think you come across those people in your life that just have a presence that is equally kind of like fierce and calming. And like, truly, Amy is that person. She is so divine. I'll reach out to Amy and make sure she's happy to have her name mentioned. But I think the more families that have her in their support network, the better, because her words are
they really are. They're just, I remember sending her that same blog post to a friend who was also pregnant, and she was also overdue, and I think she went into labor the night after she read it or something. It's just there's definitely something about Amy's words that are just, and in person, like if anyone can be with her in person, she is just, if I ever have another baby, I'm like, Amy, actually, obviously, Charlotte, you two, come on. Like, you two would be like the absolute dream team. But Amy with her acupuncture and all of that sort of knowledge and wisdom that she brings through all of her work is just, it is magic. That's the right word for it. She is magical.
So it was a pretty wild time. I think, look, I think a lot of families or mamas or birthing people get that little bit of an existential crisis towards the end of their pregnancy. Like, what are we doing? What is this world? What are we leaving our young people? But it was a particularly challenging time to be bringing new life into the world. How were you feeling more broadly?
I remember having a big conversation with my cousins who were all not pregnant at the time, and I remember feeling like it was such a pull because I'd gotten to the point, and I think I always had it inside me that I really wanted to be a mom. I had connected so much with this little baby inside me. So I just remember, you know, really feeling like I knew her from, you know, the kicks and the movements. And I'd already gotten to know her sort of rhythms and routines through the day of like, this is when she'll kick and, you know, this is when she'll move about and she'll get pretty crazy in the end of the day, sort of things like that. So I think when this was all happening, like I'd already really felt I'd connected with her. So it was hard because I think if I wasn't pregnant and all this stuff had come through, I might have felt differently. But because we'd kind of gotten to this point, I just thought, okay, I just need to now protect this little human that we've grown. We need to bring her in, and then we need to, you know, the only way I could come to terms with it all is we just need to help grow her up to be one of the positive lights in the world to help. I don't want to say put the pressure on to change the world, because we definitely don't want to do that to this next generation, but, you know, just be a positive person in the world and just give her good values and teach her how to be, you know, caring for the world and caring for the people in the world, and I guess just be another positive person, and also just try and do the right things to help her world be as safe as it can be in what felt like a very unsafe and unprecedented time. So and then that was all pre-COVID too. It's like before COVID was even, you know, a thing on our radar.
2020, you were a treat.
I know. Anyway, I do remember we had some really beautiful times before all of this. Like, pregnancy and pre-birth sounded like it was pretty rough, but we had, you know, I think an amazing like 6 months where it felt very calm, and just we had some really nice little trips away. We went camping a few times and went away for the weekends, and I think there was definitely calm and relaxing and, you know, sort of beautiful moments where we could sort of bunker in and think about our new little family life. So I think those times were really important to be able to get through the hard times as well.
And what were those first few signs that Sienna may be ready to come earthside?
Oh, we never got them, unfortunately. So I did lots and lots and lots of walking and prepping. I did all of the things that they say to do, even though I was like, I'm not going to do those things. I'm going to let her come naturally. I think it was week 40, and then it was getting closer to 41, and the women's have a allowance that you can go to 41 plus 2, I think it is. So I was like, all right, I'm going to eat pineapple. I had 6 dates a day. I think dates are apparently something that can bring you into labor. I can't even remember. I had a little routine each day. I went for a huge, huge walk with our doggo, so he was super happy at that time too. Towards the end of the pregnancy, work from home became a thing, so Lee was always at home too, so that was kind of nice. We got to 41 weeks, and I had an appointment at the women's, and the midwives had said, if you can, try and push the induction date out a little bit. And so I said, all right, if things are looking okay, can I push it a couple of more days? And they said, yes, we can let you go to 41 plus four, but you have to come in every second day for a checkup. And I thought, okay, we'll give it a go. It's four more days. But if I can go into labor naturally, that's what I would ideally love, because I think I'd been scared off by the whole induction process that I guess I read about or heard about. So I left at 6 p.m. I think it was on the Friday, and I had to go back in at 7:30 a.m. on the Saturday. And at 7:30, they did another check. I think they checked the heart rate, which was all good. And then they checked the, what's the fluid called inside the placenta?
In the sac, the amniotic fluid?
Yeah, amniotic fluid, that's right. They checked that again. That had reduced by, I think, 3 centimetres, which is huge. So I think, I can't remember the safe zone, but it was underneath the safe zone. So it was under 5 centimetres. And what they said, which was really interesting, was that basically placentas have a lifespan. And so it seemed like the lifespan of this placenta was ready to finish up. So they said, today is the day. We'll induce you into labor. I said, okay, well, if we're going to do this, I'd like the balloon catheter, please. And I remember the midwife looking at me at the women saying, you know what that is? And I was like, yeah, because our midwives were so amazing. They had kind of briefed us in on all the processes. So I felt like even though I was in that sort of stage or in that moment, I was able to know what my choices were from there. So
so important.
That was definitely invaluable. Yeah, for sure. I think at the time they said, because we need to get her out probably sooner rather than later, the balloon catheter is a bit of a time-consuming process, so we won't be able to do that. We'll have to do the gel. And then I thought, oh, gosh, okay, well, everything's kind of gone out the window now. I'll just have to go with the flow. I think actually that weekend was the weekend before lockdown, so everyone was being induced. And I don't know if that's because they wanted to be or because the hospital were trying to get as many babies out as possible before lockdown, because no one kind of knew what was happening. But the birth suites were just jam-packed full. So I think that kind of actually worked to my advantage in the end. I think they needed more time up there somewhere. So they said, all right, we'll do balloon catheter. And I was so relieved. So we went up to, it was not birth suite, but it was another room, another sort of room like that, to get the balloon catheter inserted. I just sort of remember at that moment I needed, it sort of all went so fast that once we got into that room, once she was like, all right, we're going to go ahead, I just fell apart. I just remember thinking, like, nothing along this journey has sort of gone to our plan.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was probably just, that was just the point where I had to sort of come to terms with the fact that I just have to let go. And she was so lovely, that woman. She sort of left the room and said, I'll give you guys a moment and I'll come back and then we'll try again. And I thought, okay, perfect. So Lee and I just had a moment. We just chatted through it all, and we knew that, you know, there's nothing we could have done along this whole way to sort of make our plan stick. So you just have to go with the flow. Yeah, one thing that I haven't mentioned is that I did a lot of hypnobirthing practice and reading before the birth. So on my walks, I would listen to the tracks by, I think you had listened to, or you had the same woman, but Surge of the Sea.
Yes.
I'd go to sleep with the Surge of the Sea tracks and I would listen to them on my walk. So in this moment, I just remember being able to fall apart, but then also pull myself together and then go with that sort of hypnobirthing calm mindset, which then from that point, I was able to sort of switch over. So that was pretty amazing. So we got the balloon catheter put in, and then Lee, I think, had to leave at about 8 o'clock that night. So he went, and then I was just able to actually have a super nice, relaxing, it almost didn't feel like a hotel, but kind of like that moment to yourself. Just, I kind of knew, you know, things are coming, so I just need to just enjoy this, watch some TV, have some not amazing but not terrible food brought to me and just enjoy this moment. So that was pretty nice. And then I think about 3 o'clock in the morning the next day, I started feeling some contractions. When it was removed, I think at about 11 o'clock, the contractions kept coming, and everyone was sort of, I think, very slow because there was so much going on at the hospital at the time. There was everyone was still trying to work out what was going on with the COVID plans, and there was, yeah, lots of people in birth suite. They couldn't sort of move us to the next spot that we needed to go. We just had to stay put, and we just kept being told, like, just stay here and, you know, we'll let you know in the next hour or so where you're going to go next. And so I kept feeling these contractions coming. I think they got to become, I think, every maybe 4 minutes apart and then 3 minutes apart. And then I went into the shower. Actually, with induction, one of the biggest things I was super upset about was that if you're induced, you have to have a CT monitor. So you're not able to do a water birth, which was sort of one of my other big dreams. So I was like, okay, well, if I can't do water birth, I'm getting in the shower now and I'm going to stay there for as long as I can until someone tells me to get out. That was so nice. So just being in the shower, I think I ended up pulling a chair in and just leaning over the chair and having the water on my back. And I was there for, I'd say, an hour and a half, which sounds terrible water-wise, but at the time, you just, whatever feels good, feels good. I was using the app. I had that on the sink. I was checking in on the contractions and just keeping track of them. They got to become quite close together. And so I messaged Maddie, our midwife, and I said, they're getting pretty close, Maddie. I think you should come in. And she said, all right, I'll come in. It might have even been saying you need to rush to the hospital at this point. But I kept checking in with the midwives at the women's, and they were like, oh, no, it's all good. You know, you've got time. You've got time. And then Maddie came in, and Lee was just out in the bed area. And Maddie and Lee were having a good chat, and Lee checked in with Maddie and said, do you think we're going to have the baby today? And Maddie's like, no, I think, you know, this is all the beginning of a induction. They can be quite a lengthy process. Anyway, I just sort of was in the shower keeping track of this, and I kept calling Maddie in every now and then, just checking in with her. And I think I got a bit hot at one point, so I decided that it was time to move out of the shower, moved into the room. So I was still in a shared room, actually, with another woman who'd just given birth. I think she had twins, but her twins were off in another room, but she was, in the room with us.
Oh, gosh.
So I was sort of like rolling around on a exercise ball and doing a few different things that Maddie was instructing me to do. They all felt good. But then at the end, I was like, oh, I need a bit more help here. So I got the TENS machine out, which is awesome. Then I decided I just need to go sit down on the toilet, because I started feeling this like bearing down feeling. I think it was only like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so it really hadn't been long. And one thing that the midwives taught me how to do was to check my dilation, which is one thing that I thought, you know, I didn't think that was unusual, but a few of the midwives at the hospital thought that was a bit strange. But I was like, I think I'm like 4 or 5 centimeters dilated. And they're like, oh, sort of just brushing it off. We'll get you down to birth suite as quick as we can. You know, there's a bit of a backlog of people, but we'll see what we can do. Anyway, once I got the TENS machine on and I was sitting on the toilet, I said to Maddie, I feel like I need to push. And if I have to do anything more than this, I'm definitely going to need an epidural. And I, the whole way along, was like, no drugs, please, no drugs, please. Because I wanted the least amount of intervention as possible, and mostly because of recovery than anything. So then Maddie, I think, called the midwives back in, and they said, we'll just check, see how far along you are, and then we'll see what we can do. Then they checked, and I think I was 8 centimeters dilated when they checked.
Oh my goodness,
please. Yeah, so we had gone through that whole process in this shared room without knowing that I was even in labor, actually. I think I was thinking that it was all just pre-labor. And I don't know if it was the hypnobirthing or what it was, but I wasn't making any noise either. I sort of had gone like right in listening to these tracks, and I just sort of like gone right inside, and everyone was just thinking that I was just moving through these sort of maybe not so big feeling, big motions. But at that 8 centimeter stage, the midwives decided, okay, we need to get her down to birth suite. And all of a sudden, a room became available miraculously. So I don't know how that happened, but they popped me in a wheelchair. And I just remember this amazing feeling when they ran me down to the birth suite. They kind of actually ran down the corridor, and the wind on my face was just like the most heaven. Amazing feeling. Yeah, it was. I just still have that as such a strong, like, maybe it was because I had gotten really hot from the shower, but I just, remember that feeling so, so good. And we got into birth suite, met really beautiful new midwives down there. Lee and Maddie set up the room how we sort of imagined it would be. Not that I even think I took notice of any of that at this point. So we had music on and nice smell from a diffuser. I was just moving about, and then it got to pushing time, and then all of a sudden it was midwife changeover. And so I was like, I think I was on my hands and knees, and the midwives were like, all right, see you, good luck with the rest of your birth, we're gonna leave now, and you can have the next women who are coming along on shift, which, you know, look, it has to happen because they can't stay there the whole time. But I think I was in my last half hour of pushing when that happened. So I met my next midwife. She was just like this fierce midwife. I don't know exactly what I needed in that last half an hour. So it was actually a blessing, because there was a moment where soon after they arrived, or an OB came in and said, the baby's heart rate's dropping every time you contract or every time you have to push. So we'll give you another couple of pushes, but if you can't do it, then we're going to start intervening. I thought, oh God, that's like the last thing I want to happen at this point. So I just pushed with all my might, and the woman who had come in, she just actually was standing at the door, kind of keeping the doctor out as I was pushing these last pushes. And he kept coming in, and they kept sort of like, I just remember him towering over me and sort of putting the fear in me in that last moment of like, if you can't get the baby out, we're coming in. And I think my brain went straight for C-section. I don't know why, because she was like almost there, but it must have just been, I think they would have had to do an episiotomy on me. But at the time I was going straight for like, they've gotten to this point, but they'll have to do a Caesar at the last minute. Definitely wasn't that. I managed to get her out. I had Maddie, my student midwife, standing next to me that whole time that we were in birth suite, just sort of actually being almost like the voice of the hypnobirthing. But she was telling me, she was kind of doing the rhythmic, now breathe, now, you know, hold and push, and just trying to coach me through that. And having her standing next to me and being that voice was just, I can't actually remember anything else than that in that moment. So she was just so amazing to have there. And that's why I'm so thankful that, you know, 20 weeks earlier we had said yes to that, because I didn't realize that at the last point that she would be the reason why I got through that part. So yeah, then Sienna was born, and the doctors all had to sort of, I guess, put their head between their legs, and the midwife was kind of like fist pumping, not really, but I felt like she was like, yeah, we won this one. So she was awesome to have in the room. So good, because it just made me feel like I had the strength to do it, even though you had other people sort of saying, you know, you're not going to be able to get through this part. Afterwards, I remember Sienna, I don't really actually remember, everyone talks about this amazing feeling of them coming out. I remember the ring of fire that some people talk about, but then I don't remember, the great feeling part of that. But when she came out, I do remember her little sort of wet body being put on top of me. But after that, I was, obviously so incredibly overwhelmed with the amazing feeling that that was. But I was also like extremely shaky, and I almost felt like my body was ready to like go to sleep. I was trying so hard to stay awake. I think in the moment where Sienna was on me, I was in awe and like looking at her. I think it was actually when they took her off me. They took her and they went and weighed her and just checked her all out. She was about 3.1 kilos. So she was a little one. But after that, I think there was a bit of drama. So I had a postpartum hemorrhage and quite a bit of, they called deep grazing. So I had quite a few stitches and things. And I just remember this, like super shaky, super like very drowsy feeling of like, I felt like I was going to fall asleep or pass out, but trying to keep myself awake in that moment. So that felt a little bit not what I expected, I think. I think I expected to sort of like have the baby come out and then be like, wow, that was amazing. But thankfully that passed. Didn't take too long to pass. But I think, once I got the drip, that probably is what helped pull me back together. And then because there was so much delay in the hospital, we actually got to stay there for about 3 hours with just Sienna on our chest, on my chest. And we had so much beautiful skin-to-skin time. So I was actually quite lucky that there was heaps of delay.
Such magic time together.
It was. It was so amazing. And just being able to take it all in, because I think that the birth, even though it's long, well, mine wasn't that long. I think they counted it as 6 hours, 6.5 hours. But even, you know, if you have 6.5 hours or 12 or 30, the time, to have that, you know, 3 hours, even though that even only felt like an hour, was just so amazing to sort of like catch our breath and be like, wow, that just all happened. So that was pretty amazing.
Oh, Liz.
Yeah.
And how were you feeling in those first few days together with Sienna Earthside?
The first few days, I do remember them being super cruisy. So we were pretty lucky with, I think Sienna was feeding amazingly. We had the midwives come in. I think midwives were able to come in every day for the first week, which was brilliant. So they were helping with breastfeeding and latching, and they gave me an amazing reference called the Thompson Method, which is a breastfeeding woman. So that was probably what helped me a lot in those times for breastfeeding. And just lots of, because of COVID, I couldn't get my same midwife to visit every single time. So I had a bunch of different women come each day, which was actually kind of good because they all had different things to say and different sort of focuses when they arrived. So we were still allowed to have them come in the house, but it was all very much keeping at a distance. And at the end of it, I think they ended up just dropping the scales on the doorstep, and then we'd have to bring the scales in and weigh Sienna. And then put the scales back out on the doorstep, and then they'd come and take them, and then we'd do the whole thing, you know, sort of through the window. I remember actually feeling at one point like, oh, you know, everyone says, you know, the birth is a day, and then you get given this baby, and it's just like your world's turned on its head. And I just think, this is actually the easiest thing ever. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. But then little did I know, that's just like the, you know, that's just sort of the adrenaline that you're given at the beginning. And then things change quickly. But apart from that side, I think day three, we had a Zoom chat with my parents and Lee's parents. And my dad said something like, we don't know how long this is going to last. It might be 6 months. It might be 12 months in terms of COVID.
Mm.
And just being distraught by that, because I just couldn't come to terms with the fact that our families wouldn't meet Sienna for that long. And I think I really loved the idea of having a bit of quiet time at the beginning of Sienna's life, just, you know, Sienna and Lee and I and our immediates, but to the idea of 6 to 12 months just horrified me. So I think I was pretty distraught for a good week about that until we sort of came to terms with it all. But I think that first little while in terms of Sienna and caring for her, she was a very easy, very good feeding baby. So that was pretty good. It was kind of bittersweet because we had this amazing experience with Sienna, but then, like, yeah, no one could come and visit in those early days.
Yeah. I think that, like, having people bear witness to your new family is so important. And to have that kind of taken away without any choice in it is really hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just think, you know, the feeling of little newborn baby, giving them a cuddle is just so incredibly precious. Just to think that my mum and my dad and Lee's mum and dad couldn't have that experience just, ripped my heart out. I think we had to wait 6 weeks in the end. I think it was. Actually, I don't even remember. Maybe it was 3 months.
It's a haze now, I can't remember. Right?
Yes, exactly.
And how was your physical recovery after the birthday?
It was actually a bit of a challenge. So after the birth, I had a few checks. One from my midwives and one from the outpatient midwives at the women's. And everything was seeming to be recovering fine. And then I had a check with my midwife. I think it might have been about 3 weeks in. She was checking my heart rate. And my heart rate had gone up to about 160 over 90 or something like that, which is my usual heart rate was 110 over 180 or something like that. So she was quite shocked and sent me straight to the hospital. I don't know what she was thinking it was, but I had to go into hospital for, I think, about a couple of days just until I had to take some high blood pressure medication and just get my blood pressure under control. That was a little bit of a challenge. So then when I was at the hospital, the other thing that happened was that I noticed a big red patch on one of my boobs. And so I checked in with one of the midwives. She said, that looks like it could be mastitis. Keep an eye on it. I'll give you some antibiotics or a prescription. So if you need to go get some, you can. The night that we got home from the hospital, I just went downhill. So I had a shower. I felt really hot when I got out, and then I felt really cold, and then I had just like an insane fever, just sweats for that whole next 24 hours. And so then we went down the mastitis path. Actually, one thing that I wasn't told was that when you take antibiotics, because I've never really been someone that's either had to take it or have taken antibiotics for any reason, but there's a recommendation to also take probiotics. So we didn't do that. And I didn't do that. And so then I got breast and nipple thrush, which is something that happened not long after. And I just remember walking along the street and just feeling like my T-shirt was chafing so painfully against my boobs. And I just, it was almost like I couldn't walk. That's how painful it was. Feeling the rubbing was just ridiculous. So I got home and I must have talked to the midwives, but we went through quite a journey of trying to get rid of this breast and nipple thrush. And the most annoying and, I guess, hardest thing about it was that when you get breast and nipple thrush, the baby gets oral thrush. So you have to treat yourself and treat the baby. So I was having to put this really stinky Daktarin medicine into Sienna's mouth, I think, 3 times a day. When they're so little and newborn and all you're giving them is breast milk, it just feels like ridiculous that you're putting this really smelly chemical in their mouth. That felt a bit hard and went on for a little bit of time because I think we thought it was gone and then it wasn't. So that was a bit of a tricky time. I just remember like having on my phone and notes section of like all the different medications that I was having to take at what time for, yeah, the high blood pressure and then the breast and nipple thrush. And then I can't remember if there was something else, but I almost felt like I'd wake up each morning and there was like another thing to sort of battle, a new thing that you have to like Dr. Google. Actually, but don't ever Dr. Google that stuff, because that is not what you should be doing at those times. Yeah, we got through it at about maybe like 4 months. After all the mastitis stuff, I ended up having lumps in my breast. And so I went and saw her. This was actually game changing because my GP didn't really know about it. But she said, oh, you should probably go get checked for breast cancer. And I was like, what? Breast cancer? Like, I definitely don't. I just remember at that time thinking, I don't have breast cancer. I've been breastfeeding and I've got lumps because of mastitis. Anyway, just the information that's thrown around is just so tricky. But
yeah,
my midwives had great advice to go and see a women's health physio who can do ultrasound treatment for the lumps. And so we went in and got that done, and thank goodness I did, because GP was recommending that I go into the women's, and I just thought, I just can't do another trip to the hospital. I don't know. It just felt like I hadn't actually had that time yet to sit and just breastfeed on the couch that I'd always sort of thought I'd have. I was constantly going in and out of GPs and physios and rah, rah, rah. Mm. The physio was amazing. Yeah, that was one thing that just, I think that was another little Amy moment where I met this woman. She gave me some really, really great advice and just was able to fix this problem super easily. And I was just like, thank goodness someone gave me the right path of how to get here. You know, when I could have gone down this path of, do I have lumps in my breast for breast cancer, which just felt crazy. Anyway, it's really tricky to be able to find the right people to give you the right info. But I think even though the midwives were a bit of a trick towards the end, like the birth part, all the other information along the way was invaluable.
Yeah. And I think it's so hard in that moment, like when you're kind of at crisis point or when you actually need additional support, it's really hard to find it because you're just not in a clear headspace. You almost need to have a sense of your trusted care providers going into it so that when you do need them, you can just call on them, as opposed to like desperately searching for help.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And I think also in COVID times when you're on your own and all you've got is the phone to call someone and then they have, you know, a certain amount of time to give you, it feels pretty tricky. But one thing that was amazingly helpful were the midwives, the maternal child health nurse, 24/7 phone service. I honestly, those women are angels. Every time I spoke to someone, they would make you feel like you're doing all the right things, and they'd give you some really great advice or like bring up an idea that maybe you hadn't thought of. And I called them a lot.
Yeah.
But they were honestly such a good person, or good people, to, even though I didn't know any of them, you felt like you did when you spoke to them. They were so gorgeous.
Absolutely. Let's talk about parenthood now. What is parenthood like 14 months in?
It is. I am just on cloud nine. I don't know how else to describe it. I think the first year was just such a trick with all of the things. So it's almost like when she turned 12 months, I felt like it was New Year's Day, and I thought all of that stuff we'll put behind us because I think sleep was also a massive problem, and when you're sleep deprived, everything is hard.
Yeah.
So sleep got a bit better at 12 months as well. So I was able to start feeling more normal. And so just everything turned around. And even though I was able to enjoy her through that first year, just not having that sleep deprivation, now it's just like I can look back on that time and think, wow, that was so hard. Mm-hmm. But now, yeah, the time with her is amazing. She's just developing so fast, and watching her do things and being so proud of herself, like stacking rings on a little wooden stacker, or just yesterday for the first time. She's always been a super crawler, but now she's just been brave enough to take my hands and do some steps holding hands, which is super exciting for us, because I think it just feels like that next step to toddlerhood, which I'm just absolutely loving. I always say this, I love this age, but I really do love this age. This age is so nice.
You can really see their little personalities forming and they're proud of themselves, and they're cheeky, and they're like super interactive. It just feels really divine.
Yes, exactly. We still Zoom with all of our family sort of at dinner time. My dad loves to do a dinner time Zoom. So, you know, seeing her being playful with them. And so she's always chatted to them on Zoom, but like now she'll actually, she does peekaboo to them on the camera. And it's just, you can see her recognizing people. Yeah. And she's got her things with different people. So, like, she's got her thing with her nonno. He does this little pop noise. We went on holidays once and he taught her how to pop. I think we were dropping the dog off to be dog sat. And then for the rest of the holiday, she did popping the whole time. And so now every time they see each other, they pop. And it's just so cute. So just those things make you feel like, wow, they're this little human that's growing and developing their own little personality. And, yeah, it's gorgeous.
Have you felt a shift in yourself? Do you feel like there's a new version of Liz?
Yeah, I think one thing that I've listened to a lot recently is this concept of matrescence, I think it's called, which I wish I knew about before, because I totally felt all the things in that first year. And it takes a long time, I think, especially because maybe I didn't think to myself, all right, I'm ready to be a mum. So I sort of just rode with the waves of becoming a mum. I don't know if I really thought too much about me and myself as a mum or as a parent. So it's been a bit of a journey and an exploration along the way, but it's been really nice to think about my mum and, you know, how she was with us, and also thinking, because I knew Lee at a very young age, so thinking about his parents and how they were, and just sort of modeling a little bit off them, and also the new age parenting styles that are coming up. It's kind of nice to just, yeah, take a bit of everything and create your own. But I definitely have shifted. I've definitely learnt a lot, and yeah, come to terms with the new person that I am and feel super comfortable in it now. But it definitely took that little time of transition for sure to get here.
What surprised you about parenthood?
I think what's really surprising, or what I didn't expect, is that there's no rest time anymore.
Totally.
So, there's no downtime. I mean, actually, no, there is. You have to make time for yourself.
Yeah.
And you really have to be strong with whether, you know, if you're the primary carer, it's really important, I think, to learn how to find balance between the two of you, because even the person working, they don't understand the breadth of what it is to be a full-time carer, and vice versa, you don't understand what it feels like not to be there all the time. So yeah, finding that balance between the two of you, I think, is so important to get your downtime alone, but then also, yeah, all together. What's been so surprising, like apart from that sort of stuff, is just, I think, just watching this little human grow. And I think that's just the best, obviously, it sounds very obvious, but I think it's just the best thing. You wake up the next day and they can do something completely different. You're literally watching their little neurons connecting. You can see these things happening in their minds each day. Like looking back on photos each month, in the moment you sort of think, oh my gosh, like they're going to be this little blob for so long. But actually you look back and you're like, they were only that blob for 1 month, and then the next month they were this, and then the next month they were that. So they're trying to keep a hold on the time as well is pretty surprising, because it does go fast.
It goes so fast. And how do you find ways to carve time out for yourself? What are the things that fill your soul?
One thing that I've always loved is yoga. So I do a Sunday yin session down at my favorite yoga studio in Northcote. Yeah, that's really, it just resets me for the week. So that's one thing that I love. But then also, I don't actually mind things like this sounds really strange, but cleaning the house. When I have to do things like that, I just pop a podcast in like yours. And those times I actually can really love having a moment. It feels like a moment to myself, but also, you know, when I have to do stuff around the house, if I don't have the space or ability to, you know, let's say go off and do yoga, those little moments I feel like can be my own, even in unfolding washing or something like that. Just having a podcast in this has been the best, especially in lockdown.
Oh, I so agree. I think podcasts are so beautiful because, I mean, of course, but podcasts are great because you've got this connection to people, that power of storytelling, and knowing that you're part of a bigger picture or a community is really, really magic. And I think super important for families in lockdown.
Yes, especially on days when you're feeling a little bit low, to put on a podcast and just know that, you know, that's either super normal, or just being able to move your mind into a different space is, yeah, so powerful. I think, yeah, hearing stories and even being able to change your head narrative from mum, birth, baby to,
yes,
you know, business or something completely different. That's what I love about it. So I might just, you know, completely change my head to, you know, thinking about my work or even just something a little bit inspiring.
Yeah, all of those other parts of yourself, right? Because it's so easy to be like stuck just in the mamahood version of yourself, but finding, yeah, the space to recognize all of the different facets of what make you you.
Yes, exactly.
And let's talk very quickly about work. How has that been going back to work and finding the time to return to your business?
Well, it has been another little transition, I think, because pre-baby I was just a workaholic, I think. I didn't even realize that I was, but I would say yes to everything and then just work it out, whether that was working late or early or whatever it was to get the job done. But because I work for myself, I really have to, or have had to learn, and I'm still definitely learning how much work to take on. So at the beginning, I put Sienna into a daycare nearby and took on, I think, 2 or 3 projects ready to go for maybe even her first day. And little did I know that maybe they go in for half a day or like a couple of hours on the first day. And then I was like, what? But I have so much work to do. So I did, I think, about 2 or 3 weeks of just crazy working to get through those projects. And then I thought, oh, okay, I can only take on one project at a time. And then learning about how my project's role, the client kind of is the one that can stop and start a project. So then I had to learn like, oh gosh, if someone sort of has a delay, then I've got nothing to do. So it's a bit of a challenge, but having Sienna at daycare, she loves it. And I can see her learning stuff every time she goes. And just having that little space to myself, it feels so good. And to just have a little bit of pre-baby self back. And having that creativity, because I'm a graphic designer, so having that space for creativity is just, definitely fills me up in a different way. One of my good friends has this quote of, and I don't know what it is and I've never been able to find the actual quote, but something along these lines of like being able to let them go off and do something and then being able to miss them and then having them back is so powerful for then the days that I have with Sienna. I so desperately want to be with her and do really nice things with her.
Yeah.
And I think that's strengthened our bond as well, because both of us have had to separate and then come back together. So it's been good in so many different ways. Yeah.
It's really important, isn't it, Liz?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
It's been so divine talking to you, Liz.
Oh, thank you.
If you could go back to pre-babe Liz, what would you tell yourself?
The only thing you can do is just take deep breaths through each of these hard stages, because they're bound to come up in so many different ways. And to, if and when you can, just really love and embrace the special moments, because they will just disappear so quickly or move through so quickly. So being present and just, yeah, taking time is just enjoy the space and time as much as you can, because life gets super busy again very quickly.
Really does, doesn't it? My goodness. It's so cliche, but gosh, time flies.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, Liz, thank you so, so, so much for sharing your story. It's been such a pleasure to sit with you and listen to your journey in detail. It's such a pleasure to watch you parent and foster so many beautiful values in C as well. My gosh, she landed Mama Gold.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Yeah, it's been an amazing journey, wild, and you definitely come out the other end. I feel like I've come out the other end, and it's just, all the hard parts are worth every single bit of it.
It is such a joy to share these stories with you each week. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone in your very own kin. You can see all of the gorgeous images of the families that join me each week and get the latest news from Kin on Instagram @KinByCharlotte. I can't wait to chat with you next week.